You're listening to TalkZone.com.
TalkZone.com.
Internet Talk Radio. Now, TalkZone presents The Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why, Insights and Solutions to Some of America's Most Troubling Societal Problems, featuring community activist Robert L. Woodson Sr., who has spent decades promoting solutions to some of the most challenging problems facing our nation today. Now, here's your host, Bob Woodson.
Welcome, everyone. This is Bob Woodson, and we're pleased that you are joining us today for The Bob Woodson Show, What Works and Why. Today we will focus on rediscovering our principles and reclaiming our future. How are the founding principles applied and carried out in neighborhoods today? How are the principles of self-governance being exercised every day in low-income communities? And what is the role of individuals in external institutions? Our guest today, Matt Spaulding, constitutional scholar and director of the B. Kennedy Simon Center for American Studies at the Heritage Foundation and author of the book, We Still Hold These Truths. William Schamber is the director of the Hudson Institute's Bradley Center for Philanthropy and Civic Renewal. He also serves as the director of programs at the Bradley Foundation in Milwaukee and in Another Life. Welcome, Matt and also Bill.
I'm
reading through your book, and the complete title, the subtitle, We Still Hold These Truths, Rediscovering Our Principles, Reclaiming Our Future. In the years that I have worked in neighborhoods around the country, I was struck by the fact that whenever I read about the struggles that the colonists had for liberty in America, and I substitute neighborhood leaders or neighborhood people, I was struck with the similarities with the struggles that were taking place then and what's going on right now.
I came to the American study of American history with a great love of history. And you, most of the time you go and study history, American founding, you study about all the big characters, the big moments, the big things that happened. What you see when you start digging into it is you see that the movement of it is something much larger than that. Would you say the history is not merely about the facts that we always learn in civics as much as it is the narrative and the larger meaning of the thing? And so in my book, where I actually try to go back and understand it as it developed in their own eyes and how this revolution came into being, why they decided to declare their independence from Britain, but why they decided and how they decided to create this new nation. And it goes through the core principles, but it really ultimately culminates in what I consider to be the overarching principle that I've come to conclude, which is the principle of self-government, this idea of self-government, powerful idea, not only as governing ourselves as a people, but as individuals, and by implication as communities and the importance they put into not only the local civic organizations, which I think you rightly hit on the head, it really become the groups that themselves carry out the revolution. But behind those great institutions of civil society, which we oftentimes overlook when we study the founding, because they don't talk about them right up front in the Constitution, the Federalist Papers, but they're there constantly. Whether it's the civic organizations themselves, the family, the role of religious faith, schools, all those things were crucially important for forming this character. And the greatest thing about America is it forms a type of character that is self-governing. And you see it most beautifully, I think, resonating and reflecting in precisely the kinds of things you're talking about. The people who are actually trying to shape that character and preserve it and build it. At the local level.
Bill, we were talking earlier about the connection between the things that Matt has written about here in terms of, and it's an excellent book, and I'd recommend all of our listeners read it. It was so instructive to me. But I think it's important for people to understand that these principles live today. This is living history. And the question is, what is it that enabled a fledgling group of people to defeat a major power that we had no munitions plants, we had no seasoned army, no mercenaries to came in and fought. But how a struggling group of malcontents
precisely,
were able to defeat this great empire. And what is the connection, Bill, between the kind of issues, you know, we've been talking about on this show and the kind of founding principles? Draw the connection.
Right. Yeah, I think too often in neighborhoods today, and Bob, you've been so eloquent about this, as well as John McKnight and others, you know, there is a kind of a colonial force in place, British troops occupying the neighborhood, so to speak. And, you know, it's not, and this is, of course, the professional service providers. You know, they are occupying troops in a way. I mean, they're present in neighborhoods. They, with the best of intentions, you know, just as the British Empire, I suppose, had the best of intentions for the American colonies, you know, protect the colonies from the French and Native Americans that threatened the frontiers. But, you know, just as we have that, had that situation, then we have the situation today, social service providers in the neighborhoods, who are basically crowding out this understanding that Matt points out. And I agree, Matt, it's a terrific book, and I too recommend folks go out and read it. But, you know, these are people who have a stake in making sure that folks today don't understand this notion of self-government. We've really gotten away from this idea. The idea that everyday citizens in America have the ability to solve their own problems, which is, of course, part of the founding principle, that we've gotten away from. And we really have to deal with this problem of the presence of professional service providers who would just as soon substitute their judgment for the judgment of everyday citizens.
Just to use an example, in the black community, is often used as a moral barometer of the health of this nation. But historically, the assumption has been that the current state of black America, with 70% of the children being born out of single-parent households, that this is a result of a history of racism and discrimination and Jim Crow laws and poverty. Yet, if you look historically, as some have, and during the 10 years of the Depression in America, actually the marriage rates in the black community were higher than those in the white community. We had the highest marriage rate. Up until 1960s, 82% of all black families had a man and a woman raising children, even though during the Depression, the unemployment rate overall was 25%, and the black community was more like 40%. And of course, in those times, we had discriminatory laws, Jim Crow laws. Blacks were being lynched. Even in the face of these economic and social and injustices, the family was maintained. 82% of black families up until 1960s had a man and a woman raising children. Black grandparents were not afraid of their grandchildren assaulting them on the streets and in their homes the way they are today. So the decline that you now read about every day in the papers have precisely occurred in response to government intervention in the 60s. Again, well-intentioned. Government intervened in the 30s. Was largely government to individuals.
Mm-hmm.
But the social institutions and the moral the influence they exercised stayed intact.
I think it also points to the fact that, and we can point to positive and negative examples of this, there is actually a very intimate and important connection between principles, that is the operational principle by which we construct government and the role of government, local community, how we govern ourselves as a community, there's a connection between those principles, what we might call the principles of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. These principles we don't associate with these local things, right? But there's a connection between those and precisely what you're talking about. And I think today the problem is we've got that backwards. We've got it turned around. For the American founders, those principles that limited government within the Constitution, and it pointed to an understanding of human equality based on this deep notion of their nature as human persons. Those principles meant something for how we actually organized ourselves and operated when it came to precisely these questions, like the family's role, or the family and the parents' role in education, or local associations and how those shape the character through activities that are local community activities. They appreciated those in a very powerful way that I've come to realize more and more, that they didn't write about them as directly and as much as we might like to know, looking back as we do with our hindsight of 2020, because at that time they could assume much of this to be the case. You see it, however, written about quite extensively in many of their books about legal questions having to do with family law, having to do with local law. But you don't see it writ large, because they were talking about how do we write a constitution, how do we form a government. But yet it's a crucial component of that, and they understood that government had to be limited precisely so that those institutions could flourish. And the flourishing of those institutions at the end of the day was what would mean we could govern ourselves. You know, one of the famous lines of the founding is the question that Ben Franklin was asked when he left the Constitutional Convention. A woman walks up, "What did you give us, a monarchy or a republic?" And he says, "A republic." But then he said the most important thing, "If you can keep it." The founders were very conscious of the fact that they were establishing certain principles, but beyond that, America is an experiment. And it crucially depends upon having the institutions of civil society do their work, for government to get out of the way, to encourage them, to bolster them if need be, but otherwise for them to do the work of creating a kind of culture that could actually govern itself. And they know that that was not a guarantee. The problem today is I think we've turned that around. Government has taken more and more of a role, become more and more involved in doing precisely those things. And as a result, not only do we have a deep confusion about what the principles are, how our government should operate, what the Constitution means today, but it follows we're deeply confused about these local institutions and the role they should play. Modern government has really taken upon itself the objective of transforming everything and taking over it all and creating a deep sense of dependency on the government, taking the place of families and local communities.
And part of that, Matt, I'm sure you would agree, because you've done such terrific work on the progressive era here at the Heritage Foundation. I know that you've thought a great deal about that. Of course, this was a time, at the progressive era at the turn of the 20th century, about 100 years ago, when this notion of self-governance and in dispersed, localized, decentralized government came under considerable fire, you know,
right,
from the progressive reformers. And it's no accident that this is the same time that we see the development of the social work profession and the notion that, that everyday people can't understand their own problems because they become so complex in this modern historical age. That local communities can't deal with those problems anymore. The only people who can deal with them are professional experts who are trained in these new social sciences, sociology,
right, and understand psychology, the new principles upon which it should be based.
And exactly.
It's also no coincidence that the rise of the progressive movement and this new argument about social work is directly connected to and grows out of a deep criticism, a very powerful criticism of the principles of America's founding. They really do go hand in hand, which also brings us back to the notion, well, if we want to recover either one of these things, the principles, the founders' principles in terms of limited government and the adherence to the principles of the Declaration, or we also would like to adhere to encourage better local community involvement in solving our real problems, these two solutions go hand in hand. You need them both. Because what protects those institutions to do their job is precisely the notion that government is limited because government merely has powers. Those powers are limited because we as individuals are rights-bearing persons because of our human equality. I mean, it's all connected in a very deep and powerful way. The progressives denied all of that. They denied all that, and they turned to science in a very problematic way and thought that they could figure out new scientific ways to solve all of these problems, which led to more and more professionalization, more and more centralization under authorities, and very naturally turned to the state.
Yeah, and I think a lot of these occurred in other areas. Remember, I was in the space program in the Air Force, flew in the expansion of the space program in the late 50s, early 60s. And I remember at the time, you know, we were racing to catch up with Russia, but that's when we invested so much in science and experts. So we weren't producing enough mathematicians or physicists and scientists. So we began to professionalize everything, and it found expression in our social interventions, too. Because with the poverty programs, what we did is a major paradigm shift. We took concerns for the poor, collected these demographics, and we took, rather than taking money and directing it to individuals, we took billions of dollars and translated into services to the poor.
That's right. That's right.
Where 80% of the dollars went to a new burgeoning service industry. So for every malady suffered by a person, there was a professional provider. So if you were out of a teen mom, there was a program, there was a profession, there was a program. So for every problem, there was a program.
That's right. And those programs, over time, become increasingly centralized. Because if you've invented a science to do this, then there's no reason why the program that works here can't be writ large expanded to the whole country. And so it just increasingly leads to this notion that we can have a one-size-fits-all solution. And this just creates very practical problems in how we actually solve these problems and creates this bureaucratic mess in which we somehow inherently think that we need to do it through these centralized programs rather than breaking it down its very core and getting back to a principled way to solve our problems.
Yeah, I remember, and we'll continue this after the break, but it comes home for me back when I was a young social work student, a reconstructed social worker. But there's a painting hanging over my desk, and it's of a black woman named Mercedes Greer, who was a hairdresser by profession. But every Friday, she would gather 20 young girls from the local public housing in her living room, and they would pass a paper around writing. They would discuss things. And every third week, she took them on a bus trip, public bus, to places outside the community. And over the course of 2 years, I noticed only one of these girls got pregnant. When normally a larger percentage would. And I asked her, I said, Mercy, what is it that you're doing? She says, I don't have a pregnancy prevention program. I have a family building program.
Right. Right. Perfect example.
Let's look at what happens when the state decides, the county wanted to set up a pregnancy prevention program. They never once turned to MERS and said, you are successful.
Right. What's your secret?
let's come in and build from the bottom up on what you have learned. Instead, they hired a psychologist, a psychiatrist, three outreach workers to persuade the community that their service was worth receiving. And they set up downtown from 9 to 5, 5 days a week, and asked MERS to be an unpaid advisor to them and to review their program plan.
Right. After the fact.
After the fact. We'll continue after the break. We're talking about how the founding principles are applied and carried out in neighborhoods today. And our guests are Matt Spaulding, author of the new book, We Still Hold These Truths, and William Schamber, director of Hudson Institute's Bradley Center. I'm Bob Woodson, president, Center for Neighborhood Enterprise, and we will return after these messages.